A5, number 11B.
Yes. Now, let's take page 63. Or 62. We start on 62, line 31. Because mortals believe in material laws and reject the science of mind. You see, it's laws and mind. This does not make materiality first and the superior law of soul last. Here you have the law of soul. Why on earth suddenly the law of soul, when she was speaking all about to believe in material laws and rejecting the science of mind, how does she come to the law of soul?
Soul mortals. She starts out
of mortals? And as mortals?
As opposite
to?
To soul identity.
Yes, mortality. Yes, immortality. Uh-huh.
It's the higher ruling the lower.
It's the higher ruling the lower. That's soul, huh? Perhaps when I went through the synonymous term yesterday, I didn't stress that enough yesterday, or not even at all. Oh, yes, I think I did. That soul is always supreme. That soul is that which controls, where the higher controls the lower. This is a terrific tone that appears in the textbook over and over. That soul is supreme, huh? And here it is the superior law of soul. So the accent is on superior. Huh? And so it's the superior law of soul. Let's take 311. Line, let's take 311, line 22. When humanity does understand this science, it will become the law of life to men. Even the higher law of soul, which prevails over material sense through harmony and immortality. We have there twice the law of life and also the law of spirit. The law of soul. Let's take the law of soul. Why is it the law of soul?
Material.
It deals, first of all, prevails over material sense. Huh? Material sense is counteracted by soul, and also
the higher law.
Also the higher again. Huh? You can hear here a very clear sense of soul that is the higher law, the superior law, prevails over, huh? That's again the higher controlling its soul, over material sense is anyway the counterfeit of soul. Let's take another one.
Yeah, well, what about the law of life?
I wanted to get around that one. All right. Then we have to read what we have, what is before. Then we have to read, from 14. Huh? We have to set the whole stage here. Even before we would have to read. At 14, through false estimates of soul as dwelling in sense, and of mind as dwelling in matter. You see, this is typical soul sense. Huh? Always when you have that in sense, that the greater is in something, you have the counterfeit of soul. Huh? The greater can never be in the lesser. Belief strays into a sense of temporary loss or absence of soul or spiritual truth. Well, what do you have when we have a temporary loss or an absence of soul? Huh? That's death. Huh? See, this state of error is the mortal dream of life. And substance as existent in matter and is directly opposite to the immortal reality of being. Can you hear? She is speaking a lot about soul and life together. That the moment we have a false sense of soul, namely of putting the higher into the lesser, then this brings about the counterfeit of life, death. So this is a very common combination, soul and life. Yes?
Immortality is both soul and life.
Yeah, immortality, you see, is soul and life. Soul shows you what is the reason for death. Namely, whenever we put something which is spiritual into something which is material in belief, then it's soul. False sense of soul, and what is the outcome of it is really death. So she speaks a lot about this immortality and existence, the immortal reality of being. So long as we believe that soul can sin, or that immortal soul is in mortal body, we can never understand what the science of being, not the signs of soul, the signs of being. So you have the tone of life. When humanity does understand this science, it will become the law of life. See? Because that whole tone is soul, life. And so she says it becomes the law of life, dash, even the higher law of soul. And see, because she had two tones in there, immortality from the point of view of soul and from the point of view of life, she brings in afterwards the law of life and the law of soul. Terrific.
And body is also.
And body.
And both soul and life.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Can you see the exactness of her terminology? And you can only see the exactness when you first ask yourself, what is the subject matter? What is the subject, what is the theme that she is talking about? As long as we just look at one sentence, it doesn't yield an answer. All right. Are you happy with that law of life? And so, good. Let's take 542. 542. Let's start already at line 5. Though error hides behind a lie and excuses guilt, error cannot forever be concealed. Truth, through her eternal laws, unveils error. So truth has eternal laws. Whereas our first statement was that mind acts through spiritual laws. Why now truth? Because it unveils error. It asks for the laws that are ruling when truth is unveiling error. Which laws unveil error? The laws of truth, not the laws of mind. We have again, the counterfeit is error. And the question is, how can error be unveiled? Because the sentence before says error tries to hide itself and excuses guilt, but it cannot forever be concealed. Why can it not forever be concealed? Because truth unveils error. How does truth unveil error? Through truth own laws. By the way, can you tell me why truth is a she here? It's very seldom that she uses her laws, with truth. Would you always call truth a she or a he? No?
It's the spiritual idea, the revelation, there is the woman bringing forth the child.
Oh, I see. I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer.
It says?
Yeah.
That it's it's a Christ being presented as the male in form of Jesus and then in the form of spiritual idea as the woman.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So this is quite an interesting rendering, huh? That truth here is presented as a she, huh? In your language, you wouldn't do that, huh? You would call it an it, or generally. So it reveals quite a lot here, huh? About how truth, I think Rosemary may be right, you see, that through the womanhood sense can reveal what has to be revealed, huh? Because it's a womanhood sense that usually can look around all the corners, huh, and detect the error. Yeah. So it's truth, huh, that through her eternal laws, it's not mind.
Max, does that perhaps suggest too, without warfare?
Without warfare.
Yeah. Warfare under the heading of truth, and just unveil the nothingness of something doesn't mean that you unveil it and then have to go find it.
Yes, because you are right, truth. If you read on, you see she says truth causes sin to betray itself. That's what you mean. You don't have to fight it or not to go through the warfare with Michael. Huh? Gabriel does it, and Gabriel is a woman sense. Huh?
Unveil the nothingness is sufficient.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and sets upon error the mark of the beast. Mm-hmm.
Also in the United States, justice is symbolized by a woman holding the bell.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, it's interesting that justice is represented by a woman, huh? Yeah. All right, let's take another one. We go right back to page 19. Page 19, round about, we read from 6. 19, line 6. Jesus aided in reconciling men to God by giving men a truer sense of love, the divine principle of Jesus' teachings. And this truer sense of love redeems men from the law of matter, sin, and death by the law of spirit, the law of divine love. Here you have it. Well, isn't it nice to see that she brings up here that question of atonement, and that Jesus could only atone it by giving a true sense of love. And then she goes on and says that this truer sense of love redeems men from what? From the law of matter. So she sets the stage and says, this is the problem. We have to be reconciled from the law of matter. Therefore, in order to offset that, how to be reconciled from the law of matter, actually it's the law of spirit. So she brings in by the law of spirit. She could have made a full stop there, and that would be very nice, but she goes on with comma and the dash, which always means I add something to it. If I don't know if you write letters or books, that's the way what one does when thought has come to a full stop and yet says, but I could still put something higher on it, some exquisite additional point to it. Then one makes a comma and a dash. What comes after the das is not really the main thing, but an additional thing to clarify even better what one has been saying. Anyway, that's the way I write. So she adds that that law of spirit is the law of divine love. And you can see it. Why? Because she said Jesus could only atone on the basis of having a true sense of love. That was the proposition here in lines 6 and 7. So actually, she could have said that reconciliation is really activity, that reconciliation is the activity of the law of love. But what has to be reconciled is that we believe in the laws of matter, and that must be corrected through the law of spirit. Can you see the hierarchy of that sentence? That what she wants to bring out, Jesus acted really from the point of view of love. He needed a terrific sense of love to reconcile and to show to the people how to reconcile. If he hadn't had that sense of love, he wouldn't have had the courage to go all through the tribulations that he went through, through the ridiculing and persecution and accusations and crucifixion and everything. If he hadn't had a terrific sense, not of spirit, but of love, to do it. It needs love to go through all that just for the sake of other people. So it was the law of love activated in him that made him do it. But what he had to prove was not so much the law of love. He had to prove that matter has no life, that there is no law in matter. He had to prove the resurrection, that there is no law in matter, that you couldn't conceal the body in a tomb, that the stone that was put before the tomb could not be rolled back because of the law of matter, that the law of matter says once you are dead, and there is nothing to be done to that. You cannot make dead matter alive. He had to prove the law of spirit against the law of matter. But in order to do that, he had to have that terrific sense of love for mankind, which said, I don't care if I can only live 30 years, I don't care if they crucify me, I don't care if they ridicule me, I just don't care. For that, he needed love to do that. So you have the both in it, huh? The law of spirit and the law of love. Yes? Yes, redemption, huh? Is love redeems, yes. Let's take in the same chapter, page 30. And on page 30, we read, that's 14. Rabbi and priest taught the Mosaic law, and said, an eye for an eye, and whoso sheddeth man's blood, by men shall this blood be shed. Not so did Jesus, the new executor for God, present the divine law of love. Why law of love? Which blesses even those that curse it. Curse, huh? The opposite of love, huh? The curse. And so he was the new executor for God, and what he had to overcome is the curse, and did it through love. So she uses the law of love, not the law of mind. You can feel it. Even if you wouldn't know the synonymous term properly, if you only had a kind of feel for them, you would feel that if she would say here in this connection, An eye for an eye, huh? Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. You would feel that if she would go and say, not so did Jesus, the new executor for God, present the divine law of mind. You would feel something doesn't, huh? Gives you a little bit of creep, huh? Why mind, huh? Here she was speaking about that curse, huh? An eye for an eye, huh? That cruel thing, huh? And you feel within yourself, oh no, don't do that, eye for an eye. There should be a redeeming sense in it, a sense of love for the next one, for the fellow man. And you would feel absolutely cold if she would say, through the law of mind. Something within you asks for something tender, huh? For something that offsets an eye for an eye. And you would directly ask, that must be love, huh? That must be a law of love instead of an eye for an eye. The law of the Mosaic commandment. Can you feel that slowly, in thinking these things out, you find that these things are already within you? You feel them. They are there. They are natural. They are not intellectual. They are actually only a question of culturing within us what already is within us in a natural way. That an error of a definite kind asks for an answer of a definite truth about it. And if the question is a cursing and condemnation and hating, you feel this should be corrected by a sense of love. So you would use the power of love, or the law of love, or the control of love. And so, little by little, you will feel, this is quite natural what you wrote here. But then you know the reason. Before, you didn't know the reason. Yeah.
In that particular instance, the use of the blessings, that would be a love sense there, rather than spirit, wouldn't it?
Yes, blessing and a blessing is the fact about cursing, huh? Yeah. Here you would call it love, huh? The blessing of love. Yes? Let's take another one. 574. We read that, let's say, 16. It is here where, yeah, we should read really the biblical verse to which it refers on line 6. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues. Doesn't really look very good, huh? And talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee, how funny, the bride, the Lamb's wife. Can you see what he did? He came with the seven vials full of the seven last plagues and said, I show you not the seven vials full of the last plagues, which Mrs. Eddy afterwards calls the sum total of human misery. But he said, I show you the bride, the Lamb's wife, which she afterwards is explaining as love wedded to its own spiritual idea. That's her symbolism. So what that angel did was what we now read here on line 16. The beauty of this text is what? That the sum total of human misery, this is the seven vials full of the last plagues, represented by the seven angelic vials full of the seven plagues, has full compensation in the law of love. Not in the law of mind, not in the law of spirit, not in the law of life, not in the law of truth. Why in the law of love? What dost thou thinkest? Huh? Sum total? Sum total of what? Of human misery? It's the opposite of what? Of love, huh? The fulfillment, the perfection of love, the compensation of love, huh? Where you give the very opposite for it. Also, in the biblical text, you see that the compensation in the law of love is described as the bride, the lamb's wife, which on page 575, line 3, is depicted as love wedded to its own spiritual idea. So actually you have this very thing, that which compensates. The only thing that can compensate for the sum total of human misery is the law of love, and it's love. You wouldn't feel happy, huh, with the law of spirit or with the law of truth. Huh? You wouldn't feel at all happy. Anyway, I wouldn't feel, huh? Because it wouldn't be adapted to the theme, namely the whole total misery of mankind. What can compensate that? We know it. We go right back to God and say, in love there is perfection. There is no other way out. Huh? Yes. And that seven perhaps too is naturally a symbol of perfection, of completeness, of the seven, yeah, the seventh synonymous term. Yes. All right. So, yeah. Well, in this way, I have shown you with two examples. The one was power, the one was law. How Mrs. Eddy would use these terms with all the seven synonymous terms. But fundamentally, we know that power is mind. Fundamentally. Because we had those terrific statements where power was defined as a quality and a characteristic of mind, because she said, mind possessing all power. From mind is derived all power. That mind is the causation of all power. And therefore it is directly defining and characterizing mind. But then naturally you have the combination, and we need that. Now you can see how we need it. We need the power of spirit, because we want to get free from the belief that matter has power, that the flesh has power, that the flesh has power over the spirit. We want to free ourselves from that. We want to free ourselves through the power of soul, that sin has power. That sin is so strong that it keeps men just in the grasp. Huh? How do you say, in the claws? Huh?
In its grasp.
Huh? And that people feel sin is much more powerful than all my moral uprising against it. I can't do anything against it. So the power of soul would handle that. The power of principle is certainly that power of demonstration, the spiritual power that demonstrates itself. The power of life is that which would show us that death has no power, that discrepancy has no power, that lack has no power, that there is just one power, the power of life. And it would show us that error has no power, because the belief is that error is irresistible, that error is invincible, that's what I want to say, that error is invincible. And the power of truth says no, the power of truth is the victor. And so we would feel that sin, that fear has no power, that jealousy has no power, that intrigue has no power, because love is that which will deal with the claim of the power of fear. Okay.